Welcome to The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Let's tune into the news now. World leaders acting like playground bullies. This week, North Korea's president said he had a nuclear button ready to launch a weapon at the United States. President Trump said he has a bigger nuclear button that actually works. These are two men who like to threaten each other with fire and fury, and they do get personal. Kim called Trump a dotard. Trump said this.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
The question is all of this harmless, blustery talk, or could it lead us into war? Well, my next guest wrote the book, Leaders at War, How Presidents Shape Military Interventions. She's an associate political science professor at George Washington University, Elizabeth N. Saunders. Welcome to KUOW.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, Elizabeth, when you're on a playground, taunts are dangerous. Your heart is pounding. Your friends are egging you on. But how much does trash talking, so-called, how much does that actually matter when it comes to international diplomacy?
Well, these taunts and all this fiery rhetoric, it sounds scary. But I think it's really important to remember that there, particularly in the case of the U.S.-North Korea standoff, there are some very strong constraints that are hard for any leader to do much about. And these are fixed constraints that have to do with geography, military capabilities, and they really reduce the baseline pressure for war. And so it is true that Trump's tweets and Kim's rhetoric are, they do increase the risk, but it's an increase on a relatively low baseline. It's always important to bear that in mind, that the risk may be increasing, but it may be increasing on a fairly small base.
Can you imagine a personal insult or threat that you would say, oh, that's gone too far? That is dangerous.
Well, these leaders do talk like this a lot, but it's important to remember that North Korean leaders have been making this kind of fiery rhetoric for decades. Mm-hmm. I think what's new really is that it's also coming from the U.S. side. And North Korea has, again, strong incentives to stay out of a war. In one reason why it has very rationally pursued nuclear weapons is in part as an insurance against invasion, because any war is likely to spell the end of the Kim regime. So if Kim Jong-un wants to stay in power, he also probably wants to stay out of a war. And so, you know, it's just, again, important to bear in mind, you know, compared to what baseline sort of risk of war. And so
the real risk here
is miscalculation, right?
Yeah.
The risk is that things could get out of hand. But if you look at the historical record, those kinds of preemptive wars that sort of result from a miscalculation spiral are pretty rare.
So you describe North Korea and Kim Jong-un in a rational way. Are you saying these are two rational leaders who both want to stay out of war, and they both know that the rhetoric isn't really going to add up to anything? Maybe they're just playing to their local crowd. They're looking tough to their fans at home, and they know there's no harm done.
Well, I think that's a pretty good analysis, right? I think in the case of Kim, a lot of analysts of the North Korea's program have noted how methodical, how rational, how deliberative it has proceeded. And, you know, it succeeded where Iraq's program and Libya's program failed for a lot of reasons. And it's a program that would have faced anyone who won the 2016 election. It's really important to remember that President Hillary Clinton would have faced this problem. It didn't come, you know, out of nowhere. On the U.S. side, the Pentagon has been wargaming the scenario for decades. We fought a war in North Korea where we tried to sort of escape the constraints of geography by pushing all the way up to the border with China. And the Chinese intervened and pushed us back to the 38th parallel, which is where the war, you know, where the standoff was when the war started. So I think the Pentagon is acutely aware, and many, seasoned foreign policy national security professionals are acutely aware of just how few good military options there are. The question is, what does the president think, and how much is he constrained by those who have this knowledge of just how costly it would be to fight an actual shooting war in Korea?
Well, on the subject of the nuclear button that is the latest kerfuffle, I have a nuclear button, I have a bigger nuclear button.
Yes.
Do Trump and Kim actually have nuclear buttons? Can they sit
No.
at their desk and start nuclear wars by themselves?
No, but they, you know, President Trump can issue an order and then someone else would push a button. But no, they don't have buttons. And you know, most analysts suggest that the North Korean program has evolved to the point where it can hit the United States and probably even the East Coast with an intercontinental ballistic missile. But we still know very little about North Korea's so-called command and control procedures, exactly how the order gets transmitted from the leader to the guy who pushes the button. But no, leaders don't have buttons sitting on their desks. It would be unsafe, and it just isn't how these things work.
It would be unsafe. That does sound unsafe. You said that the North Korea could hit the American East Coast with a missile, possibly, and that window closed fast, where we were talking about the Seattle area and the West Coast being that's the spot where Kim Jong-un can now reach, and then pretty soon we're talking about it going over our heads. Was any of that talk ever relevant, the Seattle focus for a while on, oh my gosh, we could be the North Korean target?
Well, I think there's still talk of this idea of denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula, or you know, this is a problem that affects Seattle and the West Coast, but the East Coast is safe. You know, I think all of that kind of misses the bigger picture. North Korea, for better or for worse, is a nuclear power. It's joined the nuclear club. And I think most serious analysts have moved on to thinking about how to handle that, how to live with that. We lived with a Chinese program for decades. We considered very briefly taking out the Chinese program, nipping it in the bud, actually cooperating with the Soviet Union to do so during the Cold War. And in the end, we ended up living with China. China is a nuclear power, just as we live with the Soviet Union as a nuclear power. And again, there's no evidence that Kim Jong-un is anything but rational when it comes to nuclear weapons. Otherwise, he would never have achieved the program in the first place. So people have moved on in a lot of Washington, D.C. circles to thinking about deterrence with North Korea, meaning, you know, how do we sort of make this a stable situation where we've got our nuclear weapons pointed at each other, but there's both sides know how costly that would be, and then that is what reduces the probability of war.
Okay, just a couple more questions, please, Elizabeth.
Sure.
One thing that we imagine constraining an American leader from starting trouble here is that our ally and millions of human beings in South Korea would be at the mercy of a North Korean attack. And I asked this question sincerely. Does President Trump seem like the kind of person who cares about the lives of those millions of South Koreans? Is that a restraint that you think he feels?
Well, it's always hard to know what's going on in the leader's head. And, you know, you wouldn't want to impugn the motives of someone without knowing that. I think the way to think about it is, what is the real effect of this rhetoric? And if the effect is not on North Korea directly because of all the factors I just cited that are sort of big structural constraints, the real effect of this rhetoric may actually be on U.S. allies and the allied governments in South Korea, in Japan, and so forth, who may begin to see the United States as less and less of a reliable partner, and the U.S. nuclear umbrella, the sort of protection of the U.S. nuclear umbrella, maybe less and less reliable. And so they may think about getting their own nuclear weapon. They may think about seeking other patrons. They may act in ways that are decoupled from U.S. actions. So they may, you know, just in the last couple of days, we've seen sort of overtures between North and South Korea. That is evidence that this rhetoric is having an effect on U.S. allies more than on the actual adversary, which is sort of a backwards way of conducting U.S. diplomacy. You usually want to get your allied ducks in a row first so that you can confront your adversary with a united front.
So bottom line, Elizabeth Sanders, again, author of the book Leaders at War, How Presidents Shape Military Interventions. It sounds like you tell me on the 1 to 10 scale, what is your threat level of worry about North Korea?
Oh, I mean, I don't like to put a number on it, but I would say that we should be concerned but not panicked about something like the tweet last night, and that, you know, in the end, it doesn't. Trump has raised the level of risk, but any individual tweet is not likely to get us into a shooting war overnight.
Elizabeth Sanders is also an associate professor of political science at George Washington University. Thanks for joining us today, Elizabeth.
My pleasure.
You're listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle, and we're going to come back to the West Coast, go to the San Francisco area, and see what kind of conversation they're having on a topic that's well known to us in Seattle, neighborhood character, and when it's time to change it to make things a little bit affordable. Stay tuned.